Good afternoon, everybody. I'm sure everybody's excited. Last block of the day, so we're all looking forward to one more session and then checking out of our responsibilities for the next couple of days. Quick question. How many people are still using SharePoint 2003 here?
Good for you.
Nice. Okay. 2007? Any hands? Yeah, more than a few? In 2010? Lots. Yeah. Okay. And of course, 2013? 0365? Yeah. All right. It's a pretty diverse group. Mm-hmm. And who focuses on content management? Some. And sometimes. Collaboration?
Some more.
Other? Only a couple?
Yeah.
Okay. Everything but the kitchen sink. Okay. All right. Well, welcome. Although the focus here is all on 2013 and 0365, but anybody that's interested in migrating, you'll probably see some great tools here that, you know, maybe this will be a little incentive for you to move forward.
Yeah, and for Waldeck who used 2003, you can't use this on 2003. Sorry.
Okay. So I'm Dave Hollenbeck with Microsoft Consulting in Germany.
And I'm Mikael Svensson. I work at a company called Puzzle Part in Oslo.
Okay. Between the two of us, we have about 15 years of search industry experience. So we're not the oldest people at the conference, but we're not the greenest either. So we think we have some really good material for you guys today, and hopefully you'll take a lot out of it. So managing search relevance in SharePoint 2013 and 0365. Our overview for you guys today, we have, we'll talk a little bit about our problem, a plan, and then the tools that we have to move forward. The problem is one that we're probably very familiar with already. We have this information sprawl problem that has a negative impact on productivity, especially in large organizations or ones that start creating a lot of content very, very regularly and then kind of lose track of it. So who here has a search-oriented role, like in your organization? Yeah? Okay. A good number. When you're thinking about search solutions for your end customers, are you usually thinking of this as a productivity solution, as a way to improve productivity? Yeah? Some? Okay. That's always the way I'm looking at it. So we have this idea of our problem. And for our plan, we'll look at common relevancy topics. We'll look at the relevancy cycle. We'll solve some real-world problems in that in our online environment here. And we'll look into detail with the tools. We'll go through this cycle for our fictitious user that we'll meet in a few minutes. And we'll work with content and query rules and dig into rank models a little bit as well.
Some of the technical tools to actually
solve
the problem.
Yes, the technical tools for our problems. So let's get started. Our problem. Is this a good search result? We can see that we've entered this XT1000 here, and we get this product overview document at the top immediately. Who thinks it's a good result? Hands.
Is it a bad result?
Depends. You've already seen the end of this. Okay, so if you are Alex in our marketing department, this is probably exactly what you were looking for. So, in fact, in our fictitious meeting with Alex, he told us, in fact, that this is exactly what he was looking for. He looks for very high-level materials, customer-ready things, and when he enters a standard search query term, he expects to get these kind of high-level results back.
Slide-deck kind of guy.
Yeah. So, now, down the hall from Alex, though, we have Fabrice, and Fabrice is constantly complaining to us about his search, the quality of his search results. He has very different needs in his role from Alex, and we'll spend a little bit of time looking at the use case here for Fabrice and trying to make a better experience for him. So the relevancy problem, matching contents to queries, not so complicated. We've all seen the 2013 search topology in all likelihood. Only one of these components is called index and performs matching. You know, the rest of this is performing a lot of other activities to try to make the matching process more effective. So the challenge is really to try to reflect the intent in the process. And when we start to stop comparing term to term, but to think of my impression of a term or what a term means to me, and then start trying to compare this to what the term meant to the content owner, we start to get into this very murky world of, you know, who is supposed to plug in what and what was actually expected. So we'll dig really deeply into how you take this content and intent and match it to your contents. So, how do we get some information about intent from our user? We have some very basic material that's available, usually. Things like the person's role in the organization or simply the URL that they were searching from, maybe what language they were executing a search in. But there's a lot of material that we might be able to use to try to build a little bit a better picture of the intent for that user. So, conceptually, you might picture something like this. If we're searching for Las Vegas, maybe we mean Las Vegas, maybe we mean Sin City, entertainment capital, and we can apply any number of context elements that might have special meaning or something that we already know about our user, like where they are or what kind of device they're using or what some of their preferences might already be. Now, our plan. First, we look at what we can influence. Query, content, ranking, user interface. You might note that user interface is here and not user. It's something where we don't always have this direct impact on what the user is searching for. So who here would say that they can 100% own the query? That is, if you don't like the query that's being submitted against your content, that you have the authority to change it, or you can tell someone to look for something different. Anybody? One? You're a lucky man. Content. On the content side, if you feel that the query results are not bringing up the right contents, can you add metadata to the content as you see fit? Or maybe even initiate a cycle to start doing this? Can you campaign to add metadata to the contents?
Or even add more repositories.
Yeah, yeah. Anybody? Control over the content, usually, also? Same guy. Okay. okay. So we frequently don't have control over all of these elements. So this is where our intent discussion starts to get a little deeper. when we're looking at the ranking process, though, rank tuning can be very, very detailed and can have unexpected consequences here. A small change can have a big impact. So we might be able to make some adjustments, but we can't necessarily change everything for every user. Also, on a related note, who takes feedback from users about search results today? This was one of the polls that we posted online earlier. Yeah? We take some kind of feedback button and we actually collect this and send it back. Yeah.
And there were actually some good comments on that poll as well. Mm-hmm. Someone saying, well, we used to do it, but we didn't have the bandwidth to process the feedback, mm-hmm. which is part of the cycle, the governance.
Yeah.
When you put search in place, you need something to maintain it.
Yeah, very good info. We're very big fans of feedback. Remember that at evaluation time here. And on the last note on our polls, I see more than 23 people here. Anybody else has used XRank already? Yeah? Maybe? Maybe that is 23. Okay. So when we start looking at this plan, we want to look for what is ideal and create kind of a gold set of data. We think about what we want to achieve, what our user is looking for, what would they consider to be the ideal set. Now, a word of advice, if you're working on this type of content and you're using a test environment for tuning, please note that you really need to have a very a sample of content in this test environment that reflects what you have in your production environment. If the content mix in your test environment doesn't look like the one in your production environment, then the results that you get when you move those changes to production will probably be not what you were
expecting. And I've certainly failed on that in the past.
Yeah.
Hard.
Yeah. But think about this when you're starting this kind of process in the future. The content mix that you're working with when you start planning a relevancy process is very, very important. Must do it just right. So, in our cycle, maybe we have seen this before, We'll start off by identifying our problem areas. We already began here looking at Fabrice and his disappointment with the XT1000 results. We identify what we think is wrong with this. We know that there's no information about Fabrice in this process. We'll try to fix it with whatever tools we have available, and then we'll deploy this and start the cycle again. Now, as we noticed before, not every tool will be available to us. Not every tool is something that we'll be able to implement to try to solve our customers' problems. So we have to tune very much to the user experience in the way that we're best able to execute for that experience. You know, if we're able to add metadata somewhere, then we should do that. And if we can't, then we have to work around this.
Like look at query logs and see what's working, what's not working.
Exactly.
Yeah, the usual things.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we start into this cycle, if you've never done this before, and who has gone through kind of a relevancy process before in the past? Yes. Maybe a few. So if you start this process trying to tune content for your users, you'll probably find that you do this very frequently when you first start doing it until you get the tuning just right. But eventually it should be something that happens only every so often, about as often as you think that the results are falling out of alignment with the roles and the personas that you're trying to give them to.
And it's important, actually, you need to know the domain, you need to know the content and know the business users. So if you can find someone actually who are interested in tuning search and also knows business pretty well, if you find that person in the company, then you never have a gold man and you should give him more money because it's hard to find that person.
Yeah. So when we think about Fabrice again, he had some very special things. You know, he's very interested in content from his legal repository. He's interested in active litigation. He finds himself frequently going to a research library. These are things that are not standard for every user. And as a result, Fabrice is a little disappointed when he gets a search result that was designed for any user. So we'll get into the tools now. This is the weighty part of the whole presentation. So let's see. New tools, obviously new as of 2013, which is maybe not so new to us today. But the new things that were introduced, if you're using one of the legacy platforms, if you're using 2010 or earlier, then you know these kinds of features are what's waiting for you if you start moving your search to 2013. So the focus here is on control versus simplicity. We have these tools that allow us to very quickly reformulate queries or dynamically reorder results, and even make it a little bit easier to tune the actual ranking model. So we have we have the short stack of tools that are available to us, and we'll kind of work our way through the stack when we're trying to help Fabrice here.
And we'll cover the top three, not the last one.
Correct. Yeah. We won't be making a totally new rank model, but we will tune one.
Yeah.
So back to Fabrice and his XT1000. How can we use those tools to help Fabrice? We're going to start by trying to capture some intent. So first off, as we kind of implied before, we had a little interview with Fabrice, and if you're thinking of tuning relevancy for end users, you'll probably go through a lot of this. Personally, the last time I went through a long cycle for trying to build customized content portals, the target was about 2,000 researchers, and we interviewed about 17 different role owners and talked about types of things that people with their role were interested in and what they were trying to find and what were the common challenges for them. So if you start into this process, don't assume that you already know or that you can find one person that's going to have the absolute view. And if you can afford the time, then I would highly recommend taking a large sample of users and have this detailed discussion with them. And it's been my experience as well that usually they're very eager to provide this kind of feedback. If you sit down with the role owner and you tell them, I really want to know what I can do to make things go better for you, to make things go faster, you'll probably get really open and really good feedback. So as we mentioned before, Fabrice has already told us that he's very interested in this legal repository, that the things that are most important tend to be active litigation items, and that he's frequently using this online research library. But we took out of this that there were some quick no's in what we might be able to do for Fabrice. He has no content control. He and people in his role are not authorized to add any new metadata columns or to insert any new data into contents. So if we think that one of the problems with the materials is that they don't have keywords for Febreze in the contents, there's nothing we can do to add them. So it's a challenge that we're stuck with. Also, in his role, there's no such thesaurus or dictionary that's available for us to try to provide more common language to Febreze. So he's kind of at a loss in terms of being able to provide a bulk template for how we might try to provide better results for him. So what kind of things do we try to do to get some intent from Febreze anyway? So we'll look first at some of the things that we can capture from Febreze. Query modifiers. We can get some properties, some data about Febreze, and we can use this to trigger to trigger actions.
Yeah.
What can we trigger? We can look for these action terms, things that we identified, and we can look for things like more likely queries in other areas. So this is when it gets exciting. The mostly talking part is done.
Approaching a demo.
Approaching demos, yes. So our quick win for Febreze was looking for a result block, something we can do to put some, take a little bit of context and start putting this quickly in front of him. So.
So for this first demo, we're going to try to trigger on intent. So it's a quite simple demo, really. So first, we'll create a result block for blog posts. So that it's a catch-all rule. So we'll show blog posts basically for everyone. And then on the show more button on that result block, we'll add a, we'll inject a an action term, which will actually trigger only showing blog posts. So we're sort of injecting intent into the query. So if you can switch over to my screen.
Okay, you're okay. On.
So I'll first just search for XT1000, which is a product we saw earlier. So this is the same result you saw on the first slide with the PowerPoint decks. So first, what we're going to do is actually create a result source for blog posts. So if I just click over here. We just had to wait for the loading time. So here I have some result sources. So, does everyone know what a result source is?
Yeah, in use today already?
Yeah. So if you don't know what a result source is, it's basically what used to be called a scope, in a way, in 2013, if that helps. Yeah, so you sort of set a limitation on it. So I'll just open this one up. So basically, it's a local SharePoint. And then I've modified the query here. So I'm taking the search terms and I'm saying content class STS list item posts, which is a content class for blog post in SharePoint. So you can also launch a query builder to do this. And I actually also added sorting on it. So I'm sorting on last modified. And then you have the test results. So that's the result source. And then after we create the result source, then we need to start creating our query rules. Switch over to the query rule page. So the first one is creating a result block for blog posts. So I'm just going to activate this one first. I'm going to activate the other one as well. So when you activate a query rule, it might take some time, anywhere from 5 seconds to maybe a minute is what I've seen in SharePoint Online. So if we just look at this rule for the blog posts. So what I've done here is added a result block. And as you see, so this rule fires on any text. So there's no trigger rules. There's nothing triggering this rule. So it will trigger for everyone. And then for the block. So here's the title of the block, blog posts for, and the search terms. And then I picked the source, blog post, which I set up earlier. And then here for the result, let's just zoom in. So I'm using the same URL as I know, so the same result page. And then the query term, and then I've added the term blog. And then the other terms. So at the beginning of the query, I'm just injecting blog, which is the intent if you click this more link.
And if you haven't used some of these tools before, some of these items where we're plugging in contents will start to become very familiar as you start to play with these yourself. Yeah. So,
So that was the first rule. So that's the rule creating the first block, and then I need to create the rule which will actually capture the term I injected, and that's the first rule here. So I'm just going to open that as well. So here I have an advanced query text match and saying query contains one of these phrases, blog, and it should be at the start of the query, but not the entire query. That means if you search for only blog, you will not only get a blog post, you might get some other documents as well. And then I'm changing the results. So I'm opening the query builder again. And then you see here, I say, okay, this query should just run against blog posts. If you go to the sorting tab here, you can do whatever you want. It won't really matter. Since when I created a result source, I said sorting should be on date. And that will override whatever setting you do in this page. Just something to note. Okay. So if I go back to this page and I search for XT1000 now. So here's my block. And then if I click show more, all the blog posts. And then it injects the term here. So this is a good way of doing it. So if you don't have a vertical with the results where you send the user to a different page, you can like just inject these terms and do that. So I'd thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. Switch
back.
All right.
And the next slide.
Oh, which
one?
Ah, good. Yeah. Okay.
So just a small recap. So basically, just create a result source to isolate the content I want to show. And that could be, I mean, you can limit it on content class, content type, could be a path, could be a source, whatever, as long as you can identify the content, basically. And then I had a catch-all rule. So sometimes they say, well, you shouldn't create catch-all rules, but it might be useful. I've done that a couple of times for news articles from the internet, because the information department always want their content shown. And then you can create that in a block. But what I usually do is, so when you create a block, you can say, should it rank always on top, or it can be moved down depending on how much is clicked. So that's usually what I do. I say, okay, we'll put it on top, and if people click results in the block, then it'll stay on top. If they don't click results, then we'll move down, and you were wrong, and then your users were right, and you don't clutter the interface.
Okay.
Right.
Very good. So this was meant to be kind of the short demo here, because most of these are going to have a very similar pattern to them. So our next core is looking very specifically at query rules, or query rules more in general. So query rules, if we haven't used them before, and who is using query rules today in some way? Yeah, okay, again, a good mix. Query rules allow us to take a number of conditions. Dictionary-based matches, for example, or historical log-based matches, and when we find this match in our query, we take some kind of action that allows us to curate to make something like a best bet in 2010. If you're moving from 2010 to 2013, you might notice that the term best bet kind of disappears from the documentation, because now it's a promoted result, and it's triggered by a query rule. Or we can do things such as reformulating the user query and moving items up and down in the rank. So query rules, very simple concept, condition, action.
And something to note is that there is a difference between the rules that can create in standard version and enterprise version and also SharePoint Online. So there are some differences.
Yeah, subtle like match regex here that's listed as something we can do on-premise today. Yeah.
And also if you look at the query rule page, which I showed, you say it says enterprise user only on some of the rules, and that means I'm using a feature only available to enterprise account.
So we looked a little earlier at some of the context that we might be able to capture from Fabrice. So we were thinking about building a little bit of his context, looking for information about his user segment or maybe some other kind of category data that we could use in order to improve the result for him. Which brings us to our next demo, triggering on context.
So Fabrice is interested in legal content. So what we've done is I create a small SharePoint document library with some legal documents. So this could be an external source, it could be a file server, it could be any place. But for the demo, we'll just create a small document library, some legal documents. And then we're going to pick up the department property from Fabrice. So he works in the legal department, and so it will show a result block with legal documents if you work in the legal department. So that means if you work in any other department, you won't trigger on that. And then when you click the more link, instead of taking you to the same search page will just send you over to the repository, whatever that could be. It could be any system that's sort of where do you have your data. All right.
Okay. You're up already.
I'm up already.
Yeah.
So I'll show the legal repository first. So here's a small document library, seven documents. And as I did in the previous demo, I had a result source. So same thing here. I have a result source for legislative codes. And it's basically the same thing, except here I'm just limiting on path. And for documents, I don't want any folders or the all documents page or anything. I just want the documents in this library. And then I need to head back over to my query rule page, create a rule for this. So here I have my rule number 2, result block, legislative codes, and I'll make activate it. And here it says enterprise users only. So if you have standard Cal, then you can't really do this. Activate it. So this is actually the boring part doing query rules, because especially SharePoint Online, it takes some time for these pages to load. But I'll rather do this than show you slides. Okay, and then click edit. All right.
There we go.
So here it still says this rule fires on any query text, which is fine. But if we expand the context button here, so here you see it works on local SharePoint results. That means that's the first all result page. And but you could add more result pages as well. And then all categories. And the categories is mainly if you use cross-site publishing, and then you can pick up the category. But what I'm going to do here, I'm going to use the user segment. So I have a user segment called legal. So I'm just going to click add user segment and show you how this actually works. So a user segment is any term in a term set in the term store. So to explain that a bit better, I'm just going to open up the term store. I'm working on it. Streaming all the way from Chicago. So, might have been faster from Amsterdam.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here it is. Okay. So, if I go to people, and then I have department, and here's the legal department. So, that's what I picked up right now. But it could be anything. So, you could create a separate term set here with intent. Could be like drives car, has pet, or is SharePoint Ginger. The last one is an internal joke. So basically, if you can actually capture the context of a user, and it has to be a term, so it could be anything. So if you have some code or business rule, whatever, you can inject into the search page basically, and then you need this GUID. So you need the GUID of the term. That's what you have to inject into the page in order for this to trigger. So I'll go back, cancel, and then I have the same result block. I do edit, and then chose the legislative codes result set, and then for the more link, I have the path to the document library. All right. So now if I go back to my search page, if I search for legal codes, so if you notice there was a pop on the page, so first it showed all the results and then it injected the page. So that's the hard part doing the user segments on SharePoint Online. Because if you look, so this is sort of moving this, some notes for those who are not IT pros but more developers. So if you look at the samples of how to use user segments, you have to create a web part and put it on the page, which actually injects that term set GUID into the user segment property variable. So what I've done here, I basically just do it in JavaScript. But because the page loads first, and then I have to do all my queries to get the GUID, and then I have to refresh the page. So that's what happens. And just to show you, it's actually picking up for that user. So here's another browser. I logged in as a different user, not for Beast. I logged in as myself. And if I search for legal codes, so I'm showing a best beta top saying you are IT. So that's it's the same thing. So just showing a best bet trigger and trigger on the same department property. And then, of course, if I click show more, heading over to the repository.
So we've really cut down the amount of time that Fabrice spent looking for that item. He told us that these are the things he's interested in, and we helped him get to that information faster.
That's typically something he would say in the interview, like, these documents are really important to me, but they're not important to everyone else. So then you inject that.
Right.
So just to recap, so it's like, again, creating a result source to limit on the content you're going to show, creating a rule to capture the intent, and then and context, and then showing that as a result block. And that can also be moved up and down. So it's the same thing. So it's a good practice to actually have it rank. So if people don't use it, then it will move down to the second page and third page. And then it'll move up if it gets important. Because that way you don't actually clutter and use UI. Because you have a limited amount of real estate on the screen to show. And I've done some research on the customer, like, where do people click? And if it's below the fold, that means below the first screen state, people don't click it. So that means the first refiner, whatever you have in the first screen real estate on the screen, that's where you need to get your information.
Most important spot. Okay. So next tool and practice, verticals. This is something we've probably seen a lot of already in other presentations here this week. So we're usually looking for information silos here. Sometimes mental, sometimes physical, but very often mixed up. We have various types of content, and we need to put this content in a presentable place. So when we're talking about verticals, we're seeing these items. I think we've all seen a lot of video demos lately. So this is a common theme here, videos and people. These are individual pages. You can customize however you want for your individual vertical. We can have unique sources, sorting, ranking, refiners, display templates, all of it.
Yeah, and the question is, how many verticals should you have?
How many?
Yeah.
How many are functional for your users?
I think five or six.
Yeah. Or four, in our example. Okay, so next demo.
Yeah.
Triggers.
So now I'm going to use a query rule which triggers on search statistics. So I'm going to find a search term which is used on both the video vertical and also one of the others, and then bring in results from the video vertical over to the people vertical, basically. That might be interesting. So if you use a term which is more common for another source, you can bring in results. That could be so you could actually show information which a user didn't know he was actually interested in. It might not be videos, but it could be basically any content. All right. So first, I'll show you my Excel spreadsheet. So I have the term contract has been used 68 times on the video screen, and then if you look for people, it's 38. So it has to be more than the other, and it has to be at least 10, and you have to have the query in the vertical you're showing it in. So if you have none, then it won't pull it in. So that's the details of that. Okay. So if we search for contract first. Oh, there it works.
Okay.
Yeah, and I actually got the video here. So that means I forgot to disable the rule first. But let's take a look at it anyways. It was already enabled. So here I've picked the query more common in source. And the query should be more common in the video results. And then again, adding a result block. And then, of course, showing results from the video results.
Which again, we observed from feedback, right? We saw in the logs that this was a common query in this area, so we knew that it was an area where we could target this and try to provide a better user experience.
And then there's the other statistical query you can do is result type more commonly clicked. So that means if people search for a certain term, and then they constantly like click contracts or videos or blog posts, and that will actually be logged. That means if another person searched for that term, you can automatically inject something. So it will just log statistics over time, and suddenly you might have a block triggering on this. So if I look at my next rule, common blog,
I'll activate it first. Then let's take a look at it. So result type commonly clicked. And then the result type is called SPC382 blog. So that's a result type I created. So if you looked at the blog displays I have with the author and the image, et cetera, so that's that result type. So in theory, if I now search for executive, so I sort of prime this, and I should go to the everything screen. I got some blog posts. So,
okay.
Yeah, it works.
All right. So.
So it's all about, well, you could find, go into your query logs, find terms. So this then it's getting hard because if you look at all the terms, you're going to get quite a lot. So you need to sort them, and then you need to compare to different result sources. Or you might have enough domain knowledge to actually just find it. But it's a good way to pull different small repositories or types of items into the general search page. Because most of the users will use everything or the first tab. That's what they're going to use. And some might move over. So then it's actually you need the benefit of the smart ones who knows how to navigate to different verticals and not only searching on the everything tab.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So from here, it starts to get a little more weighty. Of the people that were using query rules already, do you feel comfortable with the content so far? Hands if the... Anybody here thinks now that they're more interested in doing this based on what they've just seen? Mm-hmm. Yeah, more than a few? Mm-hmm. Great. So let's look at some of the heavier stuff here. Write this down. So XRank, you don't really need to write it down, by the way. This is all managed without us. XRank allows us to promote or demote particular items. It's a very simple tool. It comes with the FAST product. This was a central feature in FAST ESP, and it came to FAST Search for SharePoint, and now it's in SharePoint 2013 as well. So you can find a lot of material on XRank, but always focus on the latest MSDN material if you want to see what's currently supported in XRank. So. And if you're using some of the builders, for example, to promote or demote items, you might notice that it actually builds an XRank. It actually builds an XRank phrase for us. Yeah. So,
yeah. So this example. So first, you have to choose rank as a sorting. Then you can select a different model if you want, and then you can use a builder to. So here's a content type article page, or it could be title contains, or there's different triggers there. And then you can do either promotion or demotion. And if you do like promote from 1 through 10, so if you look at the XRank statement on the right side there, so you have, it says XRank CB equals 0.6, STDB equals 0.6. So that's what it adds. And if you do 7, it will be 0.7. And if you do 10, it will be 1.0. So that's probably some good values. So if you worked with Fast ESP before, or faster for SharePoint XRank, then you didn't have normalized values. So you could add like 1,000 or 100 points is sort of understandable. But now everything is normalized, and you have weights on the different parts. So it's hard finding the right value. But if you do promote to the top, it will do a constant boost of, I think, 5,000. So that means it'll probably move to the top. So in my experience, when you look at the rank score for items, it'll typically be somewhere between 8 or 9 and 50. So 5,000 is a lot when you normalize it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and when we're looking at the next example here, we're going to use a tool, the 2013 query tool. This is something that was produced by some of our colleagues in MCS. It's on CodePlex, so anyone can go and get it if they want to. It uses the REST API and gets us a lot of information that we can use for troubleshooting. So, or just trying to better assemble queries that we might want to execute. It gives us lots of information, as we can kind of see in the screen here. That there's a lot of we can see all properties, we can get some rank detail information. And
so that's actually, today we're releasing version 2 of that tool. So it's Max Melchior is here somewhere, and we added some features sitting over there. Great guy. So we added some more features to this tool to make it even more available. So One is pulling in the rank details. I'll show that in the next demo, so you can actually see sort of which component gives what weight. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's better than nothing. So that page is already in SharePoint. So if you know the URL, you can pass it in. But I think it's easier to have it in this tool. And added some other features as well. So it'll be available on Coldplex after this session as soon as I get time to log into Coldplex and make it available.
So in summary, it's a really great tool. And if you have this kind of search-oriented role where you find yourself trying to test a lot of different query structures, and you're not using this, then you are working at a disadvantage. So
definitely.
Definitely say go get it if you're not using it. All right. And next demo.
Yeah. So for the next demo, so I'm going to use the query builder. And then I'm going to look at two different results on the page and show you, well, so why is one ranked above the other? So I guess you already switched over to my screen.
Switched. Yep. I went fast. Sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. So if I search for XT1000, I'm just doing the UI first, so I get some PowerPoints. And 1, 2, 3, and then hit number 4 here. And then 5 is a Word document. So why is the Word document further below than the PowerPoint? So if I fire up the tool, so I hope everyone can see this. So I'll go into search for XT1000. Same thing. All right, and then go to my results. So if we look at item number 1, I'm going to click Show Rank Detail. So here's the rank detail for the first one. And then I'm going to do number 5, and then do rank detail. Let's see if we can do it like this. Right. So here you see, okay, so the term score is 3.14 for the first one, and then it's 3.18 for the second one, and then let's just scroll down a bit so we see the full rank score. I think this is hard, just so you know. So the first one has 13.0363, and the other has 12.9892. So it's not that much a difference in terms of a number, but what actually constitutes this number. So if we look at the statistic for the terms, so one document has a term 35 times, the other 29. So that might influence in the best match 25 formula, which you showed. And so basically, you can start analyzing this page. And then here's a XML for it. And here's a legend further down saying what the different values are. I'm going to go into too much detail about it. But it's something to examine and trying to figure out why a result is ranked higher than the other. So if it's due to the best match 25 formula, then it's probably fine. If it's some other, so file format also counts on the formula. I haven't been able to actually find the weight or the number in this page for the file format, but you can look in the rank model. I'll show that later as well. So if I go back to the tool. So one thing which is different, number 5 is written a couple of days ago, because that's when I modified that document. While the first document is almost a couple of years old. Okay, so let's see. So for the next demo, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take newer content and make it higher up in the result page. So that's what was called freshness. So if you're working on-prem, you can actually modify the rank model and add a freshness component to it. But if you're working SharePoint Online, you can't do it, even with the new rank tool. So in this tool, I added the freshness boost generator. This might look very scary. So basically, it's a nested XRank statement. So what it does is it looks at the date of the document. So it's 0, if it's created today, 1 day old, 7 days old, 30, 60, 90, how many days or different intervals you want. And then the maximum constant boost score I'm going to give. So that means if I create a document today, it will get one more point in rank. So it's basically a logarithmic formula looking like this. So, and the reason for the exponential notation here is because if you start writing query rules using numbers and you use dots, and then you turn into, for example, Norwegian locale, which I did for a customer, then it uses, which uses comma, then this will fail when it parses the number in the query engine. But if you use the previous one, we had on the slide with context boost like from 0 to 10, that automatically creates the same thing. Because it's using .NET behind and doing a parsing of this string. So that's why if you have multiple languages, you should use exponential notation if you have some decimal numbers in your query rules.
Right.
That was a lot of text.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to take this query, and I'm going to paste this into the query builder. I'm going to change back to XT1000, and then execute the query. And then that document is on top, now with a score of 13.8. So I got like 0.9 high or something. So probably good at it. Yeah. And just to show the same thing, so I'll go back to my query rules, and I have a freshness boost component here, and I'll activate it. So basically the same query. You just copy it out of the query builder. If you add this to your query rules, it should be at the bottom, because you want to execute every rule first, which might do something, and then you'll rearrange at the bottom. And also, if you have two query rules which tries to change the ordering of the results, none will work. So you can only have one. So that's something to note as well.
Yeah, definitely keep that in mind.
Yeah. So if you want two extracts, you can create a result source and add one extract statement there and have one query rule. So that then you're over to two. And there's some other hacks you can do to get more, but so basically you get one, you can hack it for two or hack it even more using refiners to get three. So, but it gets hard. So if I just search, and then I get the same document on top.
All right. Yeah. Very good. Do you want to see this one?
Yeah. Just skip.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So
basically, using the tool to try to figure out why is something ranked above the other. If you want to look at the score or whatever properties is in the item you're working with, using this tool is a must. It's the easiest way to actually get something working. And then just copy the text and try the text. So if you do extract, you can just try it in this tool first and then put it into the rule when you know it's working. And it's non-trivial, as you saw, to see why is one document ranked above the other. Using the terms is easy, but there's tons of features and there's a neural network in this rank going on. So it's hard knowing what actually happens.
Yeah. As we said at the beginning, we usually have to be careful when we start editing rank models because you can very easily have unintended consequences. So that said, we'll get into the next section here. Tuning the rank model, this is the last big part. So look at customizing the rank model after you've tried everything else. If you've exhausted the easy options and the only thing that we can see is that we can definitely improve the quality of most queries, and the only way to get there is to start changing the rank model. This is the time that we start to actually consider tuning in this part. And as always, we do a little bit at a time. So, ranking algorithm, also take notes. There will be a test. The BM25F is the model. You may have seen this as one of the score items that came back in the query tool as well. Ranks items based on the number, based on the appearance of terms in the full text index. It sounds very obvious, and can be input from any managed properties in your full text index. So, it's a very detailed process. And as you can imagine, if you start tuning in this area, be very, very careful if you are not familiar with this. If you're not doing it, if you're not doing this regularly, then don't turn the dial too far.
Yeah. And the F stands for fields, so that means title can rank more than the body or the authors. You can have different weights on the different fields.
Yeah. So, by default, a rank model has a certain number of features here. It's usually looking at title, author, clicks, of course. We all are very interested in the click rank, file type, and authoritative sites level. So these are things that are already being considered. Anything else is when we get into to tuning. So, a quick note on authorities, since we mentioned that this is in the default model. This is an SSA level configuration. You can plug in a site that you consider to be most important, maybe the top level site for your collaboration site, for example. And the importance of these sites kind of echoes out with each hop here. So, weighted by distance to the authority. Making big changes in authorities or making a lot of authorities will quickly negate the effects of authorities. So
Again, something that you might want to test with a little bit to see whether or not making significant changes to your authorities has a big impact or if it has a negative impact. So, finally, the hot item here, the tuning tool. Does anybody know what, has anyone seen this kind of model before? No? It's an abstract of the neural network that gets used in the ranking process. So if you are looking in the Office store for the app that you're about to see here, and you see something that looks like this, you're in the right place. Don't worry, you don't have to know exactly how this this functions. It's just more of an anecdote. So that said.
Yeah. And the good part was, so did anyone attend the session at the last Shaper conference where they spoke about certain about the same topic? And they showed the same tool as well. And then they said, well, so this tool will be out in a week. And it came out a month ago. So it took some time to actually get out in the store.
Yes.
Yeah. So you now can actually add this to your Shepherd Online tenant. So it's not available for on-prem yet. It will be on-prem. I think it's...
No dates.
No dates. Okay. It's later.
Yes.
Maybe
yes.
Next conference. Who knows?
Cloud,
right.
Cloud first. Yeah. So, but yeah, short version, this new rank tuning tool has been in the store only since the middle of January, yeah. I think. So yeah. You really can go and use this today in your Office 365 environments.
All right.
So.
Yep. So I've added this app to my tenant. So I'm just going to enter the app. So here you have all the default models. So the main result default ranking model is what is used on the main search results. So what I've done is I've copied this down to my SPC 382 demo model. So I'll do edit. It's got some cool features. So I'll show that as I go along. Then I'm going in here, choose my draft. It's loading. All right. Okay. So what you see first is so you pick the result source, and then has an says judge queries. So the good part with this tool is you have to provide it with a number of queries. It says in documentation you need at least 10 in order to use the auto-tune button down here. The probable bug because you have to add 11, because if not that button will be disabled. So you need at least 11 judgments queries. And then you need to judge the results. So I'm just going to go into the judgment set I have here. So what I've done for this model, so it's not a very very good model for use, but just for demo. So I said that all Word documents are good, all PowerPoints are bad. That's what I've done. So if I go for one of my queries, XT 1000, and I do judge results. So what you'll see here, you start getting the results, right? And then you have this star, so you say, okay. So one is broken link, two is bad, three, four, five. So as you see, I've judged my results. I said, okay, this is a PowerPoint, that's got a two. And with the current model, you see, I have Word on top, and that's been a five. And you need to judge at least 10 documents. So 11 queries, 10 judgments per query. That's what you have to do. You should probably do a lot more. And then you can also here choose, so which user is actually doing this. So in order to use this tool, you should probably look at your top queries, perhaps, and just take like a bunch of them. You can actually import it into the tool. And then distribute it to different people. And then show them this tool and just have them click, is this good, is it bad, is it good, is it bad, and then trying to figure out the intent. So you might do one type of user. If you know the term is controversial between two different groups, then you might need a different ranking model for one group. Then you can use the context I did earlier, and then you can have different rank models for different users.
Yeah. Always tuning the experience to the personas. So yep. If you identify uniquely or conflicting ones, then that's a perfect place to split.
Yeah. So you can do some tuning in general, but it's hard to do the general stuff. Okay. So then I'll click.
And also, if you're looking for the tool in the store and online, you'll see that there's a block of documentation that will also explain how to do these things. Yeah. So we go very quickly through because we've seen it over and over again already, but yeah. There is material out there to get you started.
And if you know, so if you look here, it says judgment coverage 100%. That means I've judged enough results for this query term in order for it to start calculating. It says not available on the others because I haven't entered it, so it doesn't cache what I did earlier.
Okay. So I'll go back here to my model.
And here's the add sample queries, add queries manually. So you can import it from there. You can create a different tool and just create an XML of a certain format. You can use this.
Right, so the next part is what features do you want to customize?
So this couldn't be any, it could be a number property, it could be a text property. So we have searchable text, sortable numbers, sortable property with specific value, rank feature from the base model, that's what I've used. So if you see behind here, I've taken the internal file type. And then can also, so if you have enough content, enough queries, and enough judgments, it will enable the add feature button here. Then we'll use that neural network to try to find feature in the model which should be changed due to your judgments. So that's the neural network going on. So I haven't been able to add enough stuff in my demo to do this. I'm looking forward to do this with a real customer and see what actually pulls up. Okay. So, and then when you've done all this, then this auto-tune weights button, it will be enabled. You click it. It took about 5 to 10 minutes in my case for it to actually return. And then it said, okay, so Word documents should have a weight of 1.8, and then PowerPoints minus 0.72. So the default weights here are for PowerPoints is 0.6 and 0.56 for Word documents, pretty similar. But now I sort of pulled them apart. And then you can also do manual tuning. So you can set the weights here manually as well. So if I then go to my query rules. Once again, it's all about query rules. Then I have a rule here at the bottom, word boost, so I'll activate it. And as you see, I also deactivated the freshness boost because if I had two going on, then it wouldn't work. So I'll edit the query rule and then change ranked results. Then on the sorting tab, say sort by rank and sort by this new model. So if I now search for XDA1000, I'll only get Word documents at the top. Pretty cool, right?
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. So a quick note on that. Number one, if you're using the on-premise environment today, you can still customize a rank model. It just involves PowerShell and text editors, so it's not.
But it's hard finding the weights.
Yeah.
We did a project where we changed the weight on the click-through. Mm-hmm. We launched the website, and results weren't appearing as we wanted to, and it seemed like okay, we'll change the click rank. And then, of course, it had only been in production for a week or so. So, but it looked pretty good after the tuning, and then after a month, it didn't look that good, so I had to go back. So that's a hard part, tuning the specific weights for the parameters, and then each component has a weight in the overall rank model as well. So it gets kind of complicated. If you got a PhD in math, it might be easier.
I don't. Out of luck.
Yeah, I flunked.
Yeah. So, yes, but the tool will be available on-premise eventually. We'll post something in the Yammer sites for feedback as well. The owners of this new app have told me that they very much want to hear feedback on how people feel about using it. So feel free to drop us a line afterwards and tell us if you start using the app and you have some interesting feedback on it. So if you haven't noticed, we're fans of feedback, closing the feedback loop. So
if you start doing the rank model tuning, you should have tried the other steps first, like doing your X rank or just changing whatever content you want to show. You might limit it, you might sort it. So this sort of like it should be a last resort, but it's fun. I mean, if you have the option, try it just to see how it works, and you might get a good result. But you need a lot of content, you need a lot of judgment sets, and people to actually vote on the different results to see what's good or bad. So it's hard.
Yeah. So. Recap?
Yeah, that was the recap.
Okay, good. All right, so that's pretty much our session. In summary, we identified our problem, we planned the cycle that we were going to go through, and we identified the right tools that we could use. We tried to match for intent and not just matching for terms, capture context, keeping every cycle as simple and manageable as we could.
And we focused on using the right tools. A lot of query rules, result blocks, verticals. We had a little dynamic ranking and a little bit of rank model tuning when we found that there was.
But it's finding these values. And the XRank format, I think, has like 5 or 6 different variables, like standard variation. And the constant boost is the easiest one because that's a number. The other just gets into the big formula, and you have to test them out and see what works or what doesn't work.
Yeah. So, summary, the summary of the summary, rank tuning.
It's hard.
It's hard. It doesn't, it's not exactly easy. Yeah. It's not impossible. Yeah. And the results will vary for every one of your user personas that you're trying to tune an experience for.
So, and use small increments.
Yeah. Always turn the dial a little bit each time. So, our motto for the session, turn your business rules into query rules. Yay.
Yeah.
And of course, this is the last session, so there's nowhere else for you to go. But if you want to review some of the other active search sessions from this SharePoint conference, then you can
definitely switch over to my screen again.
Switch to your screen, yes.
Yeah, we'll leave that up and take some questions. Number 6.
Yes. Also on the Yammer site, if you want to print your own
diploma. If you want a diploma or a poster. So I wasn't sure if I wanted to like do Jedi Knight or Sith Lord. So is there sort of going to the dark side or not? I'm not sure, but something.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're right up to the end, so we can take questions.
There's a microphone over there if you have some questions. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question.
Do you want to just come up here?
Yeah.
No, we can take them. We'll take them in. So just take them. Maybe someone else is interested.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah, it's working now. So those search verticals, I saw the document count being displayed there, and.
So that's something I will put on Coldplex later on.
Oh, okay. So it's custom.
Yeah, it's a custom control template for search results, pulling back the counts.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're executing every search query. I had the same question.
Yeah.
You execute the search query of each search page for this account.
To get the count.
For this count.
Yeah. So it's some modifications I made to the search center.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. But I'll make it available. I just have time to blog it and put it out there.
Good.
Okay. In Fast Search for SharePoint 2010, we used to have a concept called user context.
So that's basically the user segment thing, where you can add more, but you can't do the same.
Yeah.
So if you want to combine stuff, then you basically have to do code and then make that into one term. That's why I showed the intent term. So if you can find your different contexts where you build them together, create a term for it, and then you have to stuff that into the page and pick it up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi. By default, the search uses AND or uses all the words, which our users find quite confusing because I guess they're used to sort of internet search engines and it ignoring some words. Do you have any advice on what to do there? We've tried using any and it's just one extreme to the other. So.
Yeah.
What's the question?
The question, by default, when you're searching, it's making an AND on all the terms, right?
Which all the other search engines do as well.
Yeah, I think it's generally people, if you start adding terms, you don't expect the number of results to get bigger and bigger. You kind of expect that you're being more and more specific.
Yeah.
So, obviously you can make changes to how your search interface is building that query, but I think it's probably better to have a conversation with the user, and if we think that we're not getting all the things that they're expecting, then that's where we jump into this process of trying to figure out what's wrong. You know, why aren't they getting the results that they're expecting if they're using all the terms that should be the right ones, or to the user, the right ones. So.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question about the conditions in query rules. You can set the dictionary in case any word in the dictionary set, and the query rule fires, and you can initially import the document set. Is there any synchronization afterwards between the document set and the dictionary, or is it actually the same, or what's the behavior there?
So you're thinking, so if you modify the dictionary afterwards,
If I modify the term set afterwards.
Yeah, so that if you modify the term set, the new term should also be included.
Automatically
yes.
In the dictionary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks.
Yeah. Cool.
So my next question, it might not be relevant to this session, but it's more on Search Center side. So
The microphone, okay. So it comes into the recording, yeah.
Okay, so my question is more related to Search Center. So it's the refiners, right? So when we click on any refiner, is there a way, like on a result page, I can get like a couple of refiners pre-selected?
So you want to execute a search and you want to pre-select some refiners.
Right.
Let me just bring up the search page.
So if
I click a refiner here, so it adds this long URL.
Right. So
if you decode that, you'll see it's a JSON object.
Right. So how to decode that value? I mean.
So if you look in the search.js file, so search client.js, there's like helper functions there. So when you click that, it actually does some JavaScript to modify and create that object for you. So you can look at the use those functions to actually create the JSON object, or you can just try to decipher what the different parameters are, and you can manually create it.
Okay. So my use case was basically like a page, let's say one page, like where I wanted to show one link. Somebody clicks on that link.
Yeah.
That value is basically a refiner node. So somebody clicks on that, it takes to the result page, and that refiner
yeah.
is pre-selected.
So the easiest way is, so if I wanted like to automatically filter by author my name,
uh-huh.
I would click here, and I would just copy this URL and then use that in the other
well,
pointing.
But let's say like you have 50 refiners, you can't have codes for all of them, right?
So yeah. But if you just click a bunch of refiners, and then you can sort of, it's not that hard to decipher what actually goes on in that JSON object.